as a graduate or as someone early in their career, that your job is to learn, right? And to learn from others. So I think being open and comfortable with feedback is also a really, really important one as well.
Hello and welcome to Graduate Theory. Today's guest has worked in HR for over 18 years in professional services, banking, health, sports, and now tech. She's a former nurse and professional athlete and passionate about developing people to be their best. Please welcome Kerry Kallenbach.
Hi, James. What an intro. I was wondering whether you were really talking about me then.
No, it's amazing what you've managed to achieve, and certainly like you've had exposure in human resources across a wide number of domains and had some really interesting experiences that I'm excited to chat to you about today. A place I wanted to start was you were telling me before the episode that you used to work at Deloitte and you were in the Australia, like managing Deloitte across Australia. And you had 1 year where you received 20,000 applications for graduate positions. I'd love to just dive into this story and hear, you know, how crazy that was and just all the aspects of this. Yeah. I'd love to hear, you know, what year was that?
What a great place to start.
Yeah.
Yes. So I worked at Deloitte for just under 10 years, or just over, around there, and started in graduate recruitment and sort of got to a point where looking at it from a national perspective for Deloitte Australia, and I mean, Big Four, global consultancy, it was a phenomenal place to be able to get a really good grounding on graduate recruitment, the importance that graduates play, I guess, in a work ecosystem, and also some of the richness that you can get from being in big places like that. But being in big places like that does mean that it's got a great brand and a great reputation. So, you know, back then you'd be out at the careers fairs at uni, you'd be out at the events, you know, student society events, and we could all meet in person still. I think that's starting to happen now. And so you would meet a lot of people along the way. And in that particular year, it was just a large intake year. I think we were bringing in, I want to say, I think it was around 500 or 600 vacationers and graduates across Australia. So that led to us obviously having a really large number of applications as well. The rulings had changed as well recently with the international students, which meant that now we could actually look at international students with visas as well, which we hadn't been able to do before. So yes, we received 20,000, just over 20,000 applications. And back then, we had really strict timelines as well. We'd open and close applications. We would screen them all by a certain date. We'd try to honestly get them all done within 3 to 4 days. And then we would start our recruitment process with the group assessments. So it was an entire team. There were a team of 12 of us, and we would call up experienced interviewers from each of the different service lines to come and help us screen those applications. So every single application gets looked at and rejected or put through.
Yeah, wow.
So it was a big effort.
Yeah, certainly. Wow. That's pretty incredible. And then kind of what does that look like? Because there are all these steps now kind of when you're applying that you're going to go through, like the automated testing, like the video interview and that kind of stuff. So like does everyone do those things, or like how does it kind of work in terms of narrowing people down, kind of when do they start getting kind of, okay, like getting the nose almost?
Really good question. And I think the digitalization of recruitment has become far more prevalent in the last couple of years with the introduction of things like video interviewing, you know, you complete the coding test before you will talk to you, you know, all of those things. And really what they are, ultimately it's a screening tool, right? It's a way to filter candidates out. So every employer will look for something different, right? And the best way you can determine what are they looking for is two things. One, jump on their website. Most employers are pretty transparent about what makes a good candidate, what makes someone successful in their company. So have a look at those things. Have a look at things like values or principles as well, because attributes and capabilities will be intrinsically tied back through behaviors to values or principles as well. So they're really good starting places to go. What does good look like? What are the things that they're going to be screening for or filtering for in an application process? But ultimately it is that. They will be using it to determine whether they take you through to the next step. So your first point is always your resume or your CV, right? I kind of say that's like your invitation to come into someone's house. You pop it in the post box and that's their determination. Hey, you know what? I like what I see. I'd like to pursue this conversation. So the first thing I always say is make sure you've got a CV. If some people still ask for cover letters, I hope we might move on from that, but make sure they're tied back to the success factors or the values or the principles. Are you referring to them in your cover letter? Have you highlighted them or where you may have demonstrated them prior at university, at your work, at your volunteer, at church, at sport? Make sure that they are tied back into your application. Once you've got through that one, obviously then you'll then have your different points to what people look for. So whether it's a coding test, whether it's an interview, whether it is, you know, a inbox tray exercise, they will all then be filtering your application based upon your ability to perform or show attributes to a certain level. So for example, in a video interview, they'll be looking for communication skills. How do you think on your feet? How, you know, they might ask specific behavioral questions. So it's basically trying to shorten the time that they would spend to you at a later point by looking and assessing those attributes earlier on. Does that kind of help? So I think that the process will depend on the employer, right? But each stage is ultimately a filtering or a screening process for those attributes and capabilities, both technical and behavioral.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. And what kind of numbers, like, I'm just curious, like, would we be talking about in terms of, like, how many people, let's say, percentage of maybe, like, are getting past the video interview into them? Because I guess it's, like, some kind of group assessment then, or, like, any some kind of a more personal experience once you've done anything like that. Like, how many people are kind of getting to that stage?
Yeah, I reckon that was one of the most sought after questions or answers I would get a lot on campus. And here's the reality. There is a number, right? And it will be determined on how many places they have in the program. So for example, if I take the 20,000 one, don't quote me on these exactly. I can't remember exactly how many they were, but we were taking, I think, you know, I'll say 500 grads that year out of 20,000 applications. We'd probably screen it down to about 800. Right. And then from there, we would get a phone screen and we would probably narrow that down to maybe 600. Right. And then through there, you'd get the filtering process through there. So every stage is cut off. And how that's determined is generally from the prior year. So what happens, your team will sit down and say, oh, okay, last year we took 10 graduates. We brought 20 people through the process because we had a 50% decline rate. So knowing we have a 50% decline rate, next year we know we're going to have to bring at least 20 candidates through if we're going to get 10 graduates this year. So it is actually all based upon decline rates from previous years.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting, yeah, because, I mean, I don't really – like some people I know are out there, they're getting like multiple offers and they'd have to decline these kinds of things. Often people are kind of the reverse of that, where they're perhaps – they have one that they're like, they get a yes at the end. But no, it's certainly something to think about.
And look, that's for your bigger companies. Your smaller companies might be a little different, right? Smaller or medium-sized or startups, they can be really different. They're much more, are you someone we can work with, right? And so the technical is important, don't get me wrong, but when you've got a smaller team or you've got a smaller company, working closely with someone for 8-9 hours a day, you kind of want to know you get along with them. Right. Yeah. And I'm going to refer my boss at Mantle Group, Caroline Henshaw, has an airport test. And her airport test is, if you were stuck in an airport with that person for 4 hours, would you want to just get on the first plane home? Or you'd be like, cool, that's okay. I feel really, really great about it. And I think when you get into a small place, that airport test is super important. So the bigger companies will use far more, I think, sophisticated and advanced recruitment screening, filtering, and it can be brutal. I'll be really honest. You know, when it gets to the finer point, it can come down to things such as attention to detail, grammar, spelling on applications. Mm. I would always get applications where I would have, you know, applying to Deloitte, but I'd have one of the other big four brand names on it. And that's okay, right? We know you're applying everywhere, and I think you'd be pretty silly to think that people aren't applying for multiple jobs. But ultimately, if it then came down to two candidates, right, and both had performed exceptionally well through the process, you do have to go, well, what's going to be the difference, right? And it can come down, unfortunately, it can come down to really minor things like spelling and grammar and attention to detail.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to continue that kind of – What things can people do to, like, have a better chance of being able to get to the end of some of these processes? Because, you know, there is a lot of automation and things like that now. You know, like, how can people kind of, set themselves up through this process to have a better chance of getting to the end?
Yeah, I think that is such a good point. And I think throughout my time, and we've spoken about it as well, and why I sort of done things a little bit differently at Mandrill Group is, I think sometimes we get a tendency when you look at how many roles you need to recruit or bring through is we forget to humanize the process, right? And it's brutal going through a recruitment. It's not nice. You have to stand there and talk about yourself and, you know, put yourself up on a pedestal. And that's not easy for a lot of people to do. And it's not a natural thing. We're not natural at talking about ourselves to others to say how amazing we are, right? It feels a bit funny. So I think a couple of things. I would actually go, my first one is get comfortable with your own elevator pitch, right? What is it? Why you? So think about how you would talk about yourself and what you're really good at or what you're passionate about, you know, to someone. So practice your elevator pitch. The best people you can do it to are quite honestly like your mum, your dad, partner, because they'll give you the most brutal feedback, right? They've got nothing to lose. You're still going to love them even if they say something harsh to you. So I think that would be my first point. The second one is see where you can, if possible, humanize the process. Go to events, go to meetups, go to online seminars, try to meet people from the company to get a better feel for it. I honestly, every time we run a sort of campaign, I'll get people from the business message me, hey, I just met this person, or this person reached out to me on LinkedIn, I had a really good chat with them. And so you go, okay, great. Well, you know, Joe's recommended James, so I'm going to have a look for James's application now. So referral is always a really, really good thing. So reach out, go chat with people from the company, go to those events, go to those meetups and see if you can introduce yourself or get to chat with someone from the company. I think the third one is tailor your application, right? Every company is different. Everyone is unique. And so really make sure that you represent that in your cover letter or your application, that you've demonstrated you've done some research about the company, right? That there's an alignment between what they do and what you want to do or where you want to work, right? And I think that's really, really important. So for example, you know, a bigger corporate company will have your traditional hierarchies and your structures and processes and policies in place. If someone was to write about how policies and hierarchies is really important for them to advance their career and they applied to Mantle Group, it wouldn't work because we don't have any of those things. I don't have any HR policies. We have no performance reviews. We have no hierarchy. So you've got to tailor your application to represent, one, you've done some research, but actually it also aligns to what you want to do. That's really, really important because we will look for those things. So those annoying stock standard questions you have to put on an application, they get read. They get read because it helps us look to go, actually, you know what? I can see that James actually is okay with a flat structure. Or actually, I can see James is self-motivated, so he's not going to need KPIs in a performance review to guide him through. So those things are really, really important. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I will give absolute kudos to anyone who reaches out to me directly and says, can I chat? I've got a question I want to ask. And look, might not get back to you straight away. Follow up. Right? Show your passion, show your enthusiasm. They would be my key tips. Your elevator pitch, go out, meet people, humanize the process for you and them, right? And then, tailor your application to reflect that you've done your research and that it does truly align with what you want to do and how you want to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so important, like tailoring your application as well, because it can really separate you like if you're sending the same resume, for example, to all these different companies, whereas if you have like, I saw this thing recently and someone had like made a new resume using the colors of the company they'd applied for. So it was like a Spotify application and it had like the green, you know, in certain places, and like that gray that's, you know, it's the dark color that's on Spotify as well. And like that would just do wonders for you, right? Because it shows like, hey, you've gone to the complete next level.
Yep, 100%. If you can stand out, and look, you know, the challenge you've got is as well, there's so many incredible resume templates, you know, on places like Canva and things, and they're all for free, right? And Microsoft doing amazing templates. But guess what? They're also available to everyone else, right? So if you're using that amazing template, I guarantee you other people are using that template. Do something really, really different. I'm thinking back to a time where I had someone apply for a role who sent their resume in, you know, Capri roses, the box of chocolates.
Yeah.
Right. And in each wrapper was an attribute that they thought they had, right? So you opened it up. So there were no chocolates inside, but inside was, you know, like good communicator. I'm a good communicator.
Yeah.
And they were applying for a role in education. And the emphasis was teachers always get chocolates, right? You give your teacher a box of chocolates. And so her application was, well, here's my box of chocolates to you. And I called her because I thought that was so clever, right? It was different. It caught my attention. And I thought, this is someone I want to understand. I want to actually learn more about them because this is so creative. And, you know, is creativity important to where I was working? Yeah, it was. So let's chat.
Yeah, that's cool. That's so cool. What do you think are some mistakes then that people make during this process? Like, what are some things that you see that are, you know, people, like, it's maybe easy things, you know, you'd improve so much if you fixed this thing. Is there anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm sort of thinking, reflecting back on kind of, you know, the years to see what are some common mistakes or common things that I think, oh, please don't do that. I think the big one would be I think we said, look, not tailoring the application, right? Just wrong details, things like that. Is just take the time to do that. I think the second one would be is not being prepared to have that conversation, right? So if you put in a job application, expect to be called, right? I think you should just expect to be called. And so sometimes people will answer the phone. And remember, that's your first impression with your employer, right? It's a horrible one, but it is. It's your first impression to go, this is me, the elevator pitch, so to speak. So be prepared to talk, right? Because a lot of the time, sometimes I would speak to people, couldn't understand. They're like, where have I applied for? Mm-hmm. What do you do again? Kind of thing. So it's not a great first impression to make. So always be prepared. Once you press send, be ready to do your elevator pitch to it. My advice on that, if you're not ready, right, maybe you're out with mates, right? Having, you know, Friday night, getting ready for Friday night drinks, or you're studying, right? And you're in intense exam prep, right? Just say, I'm so sorry, I can't talk right now. Is there a time that I can call you back? That is totally okay to do. Don't worry, don't panic, but be ready. If you're not ready, be okay to say, I'm not ready right now, or I'm so sorry, I'm in the middle of something. So I think that would be my biggest advice, is it's okay to say not now. The other one would be when you're in the interview is, or group assessment, particularly group assessment, is you've got to contribute, right? That was the number one thing that used to always get people screened out, is that they wouldn't contribute. Right. And so what we want to see in a group assessment style thing is your input, your insight, and your ideas, right? Whether they're right or wrong doesn't necessarily matter, because you're not getting assessed for technical, it's more the behavioral, the team aspect. Just you've got to collaborate and contribute to that. It was a number one reason. So that would be my big one. I will say a tip on that one is, often people say, but I had someone who was really dominant in my group. Yep. You will.
Yeah.
That will also happen in life, right? When you're coming into a team or you go to a client meeting, there's always someone who's a little bit more dominant or a little bit more verbose in putting forward that. So deal with that. It might be, hey, look, that was a really great suggestion, James. Yeah. Thanks for leading that discussion, right? You can still contribute in ways. So have a think about things such as input, counteraction, or recognition in group. All of those things are considered collaboration and contribution. I think the final one would be in the interview, be prepared, practice. I honestly can't emphasize this enough, is to actually sit down and practice interviewing and talking about yourself and drawing upon examples from your life, work, uni, sport, wherever, to reflect what you've done, okay, or how you've got particular skills or attributes. And do your research about a company. I think every single time we still get people, I don't know what you do. I'm not sure exactly what that company does, or what are the different things or brands you've got. So research, right? You'll get an invite in your diary. You'll get advance notice if you're going to interview. Be prepared to talk and be prepared to show what you know about that company as well.
Yeah, certainly the preparation is great. And I think even like we were saying with the resume, tailoring it to the company, you know, it's important to understand if you're getting to that stage, you know,
what
are the company's values, like, you know, you've got to know, show a little bit of interest.
You do, right? The probably so, James. And one other thing I'm going to say is, and I get it's so nervous in interviews, right? It's a superficial environment and interview, right? It's like, please stand here for an hour and tell me how amazing you are, right? We don't do that every day. So nerves and feeling uncomfortable, I think, are all really normal feelings, right, when you go into an interview. But remember, it's also a two-way conversation, right? So they're there to say, hey, this person's someone I want to work with. And ultimately, it's also an opportunity for you to determine, are they people I want to hang out with for 8 hours of my life every day, right? It's a two-way kind of thing. I think spend some time in non-interview chat, right? So that's really important, that walk to the interview room or when you log on for a virtual interview, be comfortable to have some of those icebreaker discussions, things like, hey, how are you going? How's your week been? What's been keeping you busy? Have you got plans for the Easter weekend? All of those conversations points are actually relationship building conversation starters, right? And that's really, really important. Whether you work in consulting, whether you work in a product company, being able to converse and communicate with others and build rapport and relationships is really important. So don't underestimate the importance and the impact that having weather chat conversation starters is in an interview.
Cool. I think that's, that's cool, certainly. I want to talk a bit more about now about if you're a graduate, you've gone through this process and now you're actually inside the company and kind of what things you can do, to do well and have a good experience once you're actually in there. I wonder if there's certain things that graduates that you've seen, perhaps some go on to do like really cool stuff and really thrive in that environment. What are some traits and some things that people like that tend to do?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think my first advice, and I think last week I had multiple conversations, and I will have a few of our future associates hopefully put up their hands and go, yes, you did, Kerry, around be kind to yourself, right? I think you put so much pressure on yourself to perform well, right? And do really well. And you want to do really well, right? But be kind to yourself, right? Don't put too much pressure. It's going to be a really hard slog, right? When you first start in a job, people tend to go really fast, right? Because you want to make a good impression. You want to build a reputation. You want to show that you're great, right? So you go really hard, right? Things can't keep going up on a projectile like that, right? What happens if we keep going, right? You come down, right? Emotionally exhausted, physically exhausted, right? So a brain doesn't work at the same level, right? So I think first up, be really kind to yourself. I think people who recognize that it's a learning journey is where people who do really well is that they understand that they're there to learn and they're curious and open to learning, right? So they know that it's not going to be, I'm going to be day one straight out at a client or, you know, in the back end of a non-test environment. Those are the ones that understand that observing for, you know, a wee while is really important part of that. So that curiosity is the second one. People who are genuinely curious. Well, why do we do things like that? You know, is there a particular reason it happens this way, etc.? So showing curiosity to understand is also a really, really important trait. And those who do, do really well, because it also shows interest in others and other things. And that's actually a really important part of building a relationship and building trust with others. So those people who do show curiosity tend to also build relationships quicker as well. I think the other one would be, what have I said? I've said curiosity. I said kindness to yourself. That's a very, very important one. I think the other one is openness to feedback. So an actual willingness to go, how can I be better? So a little bit that growth mindset, really, if you're thinking about it, is going, I want some feedback to understand how am I going? What am I doing well? What could I be doing differently? And that can be really tricky, I think, when you're a grad, because you open yourself up to feel vulnerable. What if I'm not doing a good job, right? What if it's not doing? But as a graduate or as someone early in their career, that your job is to learn, right? And to learn from others. So I think being open and comfortable with feedback is also a really, really important one as well. And that will also build your level of, I guess, comfort and safety in going, it's okay if I don't know everything. And then I think the final one would be, particularly if you're in a bigger company, or is understanding what that journey looks like. What does good look like? You know, a lot of places have so many amazing career paths already mapped out, right? Or if you're at an associate level, these are sort of the attributes or the capabilities that make good, right? Have a look at those, understand them, take some time to understand what does that mean. If it is showing, you know, a willingness to collaborate with others, spend some time to go, okay, what does that look like in real life? It doesn't mean I'm contributing in meetings. Doesn't mean that I offer to take the minutes, right? And so I think if you can understand those, and either through your manager, a people guide, or HR, understand what that looks like in a small company. If you're in a startup, say, or a small to medium, they might not have all of those sort of processes or frameworks in place. Actually, sit down and maybe ask someone, who, you know, what does good look like? Who's someone who's awesome, right? What do they do that makes them awesome at this company, right? And so get an understanding of what are the things that you could be doing or showing to help that. Because I think once you've done that, it's really, really important. I think if you know that, then it helps you set some expectations around your own expectations as well. So they would be probably my key points around it. Probably the only other one is, and I'm going to be really honest and say it, is people who want to do everything, right? It's so they want to do everything without really understanding going deep first. So they want the breadth without getting the depth. And I think that's great, right? You can learn lots and lots of different things. But as you progress throughout your career, at some point you're going to have to be able to go deep in some topics, right? And so be patient. Right? Be patient. Is that, yes, you can absolutely learn lots of different things, but also recognizing that going deeper in some particular topics or contents or specialist areas is also really, really important as you progress throughout your career.
Yeah, I totally agree there. Definitely. And yeah, I liked what you said there about like a role model or someone that's like, you know, a few steps ahead, kind of what are the things that they do well, and trying to model that. Because I think, you know, often it's hard to find. Well, it's quite unique, right? Each organization, like the people that are doing well are probably slightly different. There's certain traits that they have that you can't just Google, like, you know, how to succeed at this company, right? Like, it's a bit more complicated. So I think something like that, where you say, hey, this is someone who I really aspire to be like, or someone that, you know, is in the role that I'm aspiring to have, you know, what are the things that they do, and really try to like improve in those skills. I think that's a great way of doing it.
It is, right? And I think that's where to think about how you learn best as well. So we do these individualized learning plans at Mantle Group for our grads. And one of the, I won't name the person, but we've put in there is they want to be more comfortable around a client, right? And so within their learning plan, what we've done is we've recognized three people within their brand who are fantastic at the client side, right? You know, leading stand-ups, doing, they're going to shadow them for a week each, right? Because to sit there, they're a real observational learner. So they learn by watching, because then they'll emulate it, right? Doing that will bring far more richness to their learning and actually hasten their opportunity to be good with clients, rather than making them sit down and read a book or do a course on, you know, great customer service. So I think being able to recognize where someone's really good and go and shadow or go and sit down and go, you know, what, how did you deal with that? Why is that important? Why did you do that with the client? You know, why did you talk to them that way, or why did you present it that way, will bring you absolute practical experience to your learning.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's really cool. And I think that's really cool what you guys are doing with that as well, like the personal learning plans and all that kind of stuff. And I'd love to ask as well, you're someone that's quite innovative, or, you know, in the HR space, and trying to do things a bit differently, trying to like see what kind of ways we can improve kind of the sort of more traditional graduate experience. You know, what are some things that you'd like to see, you know, change, or, you know, what direction do you want to sort of head in with this? Is there any things that you're like, I'd love to see change, you know, in this area with respect to grad program?
Oh gosh, how much long time have we got? Okay, so I think for me, I think it's just taking a moment to recognize that they're adults. You know, I think sometimes we forget that, you know, when students, you know, if we talk about students here, when students finish, they've probably been adults for 3 or 4 years already, legally, right? Turned 18 when they joined uni. But I think sometimes we forget and we remove that autonomy or that opportunity for them to behave like adults by labeling them as grads and bringing them in as such. So we remove the right for them to have that contribution or input into their own career. And so I think it would be just to take a moment and reflect on all the richness and diversity that people bring into a role. And study is just one of them, right? Study is one pathway into a career. But perhaps people have been working, through it, and they've developed and harnessed all these amazing skills. Perhaps they're self-taught. And I think the rise of online learning and, open source has contributed to a wealth of information that people have acquired by themselves, not through traditional educational pathways. So I think it would be to recognize that they are adults and provide them the opportunity to contribute to that as well. I think the second one would be don't just think about opportunities rather than pigeonhole early, right? Is there an opportunity to expand out of that, right? So you might have studied commerce at uni and you majored in accounting, right? That doesn't mean that you can only be an accountant. What are some of the skills that accountants bring? And it's things such as attention to detail, ability to problem solve, right? So look at the skills behind a course rather than label the person to what they studied, I think would be a really, really great one. And you know what? The US do it brilliantly, right? In the US, you don't get recruited by your degree. You know, it's that you've studied something and then they look at that. And I really wish and I would have hoped that we'd moved on from that, but we still tend to do that here in Australia. I think the other one would be to really focus on building those human skills. I don't like the word soft skills, human skills, and do a much more emphasis on that, because they're the skills that actually enable someone to be successful. Right? I don't think in my whole HR career I ever, when, you know, you were sitting at the table doing promotions and salary reviews going, oh, hang on, but James studied at the University of Melbourne, so he should get promoted, right? No one ever talks about that. Once you're in a job, it's actually based upon how you are performing, right? And are you aligned to the way that we work and the culture and the attributes, right? So let's focus on building those human skills that we then look at and assess throughout someone's career and really target them early in the career, enable them to be really grown and harnessed early, and then support them later.
One of the things that, like, I know we're sort of running out of time now, which is unfortunate because I'd love to chat to you for hours and hours probably. But one of the questions I ask of all the guests that I have on the show is, and maybe you can take this in a different direction, given your experience with lots of graduates. But the question I ask is, you know, if you had to restart your career and you know, wind the clock back to when you were first starting out, what kind of things would you do differently, or what things would you tell yourself if you were in that environment again?
Yeah, I so know this. And I know this because as a career changer myself multiple times, it can feel really, really overwhelming when you start something, right? Our education system is designed to go to primary school, high school, university, job, right? And so if you don't follow that pathway, you go, I must have done something wrong, or I haven't succeeded as to the point that I should have, right? And I had that myself. You know, I finished my sport, I then went into nursing and realized that I didn't actually want to do nursing. So what do I do? And you can kind of have a little bit of an identity crisis around that. My advice would be, it is okay to not know what you want to do. It is totally okay. Your life is not over. Your life is just beginning, right? It's, you're just at a fork in a road where you need to choose. So I would say, be okay if you don't know. And also, if you go into a role or a company and it doesn't feel right, right? You're not being your best self. Don't stay. Honestly, don't stay. If you are giving up 8, 9, sometimes 10 hours of your life to a company, right? You want to enjoy being there. You want to actually go, hey, I'm really excited to get up to work today. I'm excited to, you know, go hang out with my colleagues. And if you don't feel like that, just take a moment to pause and say, why not? Where am I not feeling fulfilled, right? Is there something about the role? Is there something about the way that their culture is or the work is? And if you don't like it, don't stay. It's too many hours of your life to spend somewhere where you're not getting fulfillment.
Totally, absolutely agree. Especially when you're young, you know, that's the time to, you know, take some risks, go out and find that thing that you do really, really want to do. I think it's so important, you know, that you don't stay somewhere that you can't see yourself, you know, for at least some length of time, right? If you can't see yourself there, then it's time to decide and take that leap and go do something else.
Exactly. You know, I think there's this old, and I'm not going to say it correctly, but there's an old adage about, you know, you can have friends for a reason, a season, or a lifetime, right? Same with your career, right? Sometimes you're going to do a job for a reason, right? It's maybe because I just need some money right now, or I've just graduated, I'm going for whatever I can. You know, maybe it's seasonal. Maybe it's actually, you know, I'm just going to do this for 3 to 5 years to work out what my next step is or where I want to go next. Or maybe you're super lucky and you've worked out what that is right early on, and so there's your vocation, you're passionate about it and you know this is what you want to do. All of those things are okay. And I think that's a really, really important thing to know. If things right now are not as you want them to be, they're feeling hard, all of that is okay, right? Focus on what you do love. Talk to people. Build your networks. And start to set yourself up to align yourself to where you're happy and where you feel like you can be at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, thanks so much for the chatting today, Erri. It's been really, really interesting to hear your experiences and kind of this whole grad process. Thanks so much for your time today. If people want to find out more about yourself, what they want to connect with you further, where is the best place for them to do that?
Oh, I'd love to. Well, first, before I do that, I want to say thank you so much for inviting me on, James. I've really loved our chat. If people want to reach out, they are so welcome to send me a message on LinkedIn, or they can send an email to me at Mantle Group. It's just kerry.kallenbach@mantlegroup.com.au, and I'd love to connect.
Fantastic. Well, we'll leave your details in the show notes wherever people are watching so they can find out more about yourself. But yeah, thanks so much for coming on today, Kerry, and all the best with everything that's going on at Mantle Group. It's really exciting what you're doing, and I hope that this year and you know, things continue to go well.
Thanks so much, James. Appreciate it again.
Thanks for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you want to get my takeaways, the things that I learned from this episode, please go to graduatetheory.com/subscribe, where you can get my takeaways and all the information about each episode straight to your inbox. Thanks so much for listening again today, and we're looking forward to seeing you next week.